Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Here is a special announcement. Today is Tuesday, and not, as is announced in today's Sunday Telegraph, Friday. And now, a repeat of last Thursday's performance of Monday Night is Music Night.
Welcome back to Evening Under Lamplight with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, coming to you from the Guido Street Studios of Cambridge 105 Radio. On our last show, you will remember we talked about asking for help and offering help to others. I thought it might be time to revisit a popular fairy tale which turns around the theme of helping others. It's the kind of fairy tale we call a beast fable, a story featuring talking animals. So let me attend this evening under lamplight to the story of Little Red Riding Hood. We looked at this story on a show 7 years ago. It's time to attend to it afresh. And come along, too. You are invited to attend along with me. Home is where one starts from, as T.S. Eliot said, and starting from home is where our story begins. Little Red Riding Hood is, like many other fairy tales, the story of someone coming of age, which is symbolized appropriately by leaving the family home. The main character is a girl, but her story applies on the symbolic level to both boys and girls, that is, to all of us. We all leave home and go into the forest and meet wolves and indeed get swallowed by wolves. In fact, we all take this journey many times, maybe even many times a day. The story gives us some images of this journey to ponder so we can recognize what is happening to us when we follow on Little Red's path. I can assume, can't I, that everyone knows the basic story of Little Red Riding Hood, but just to refresh us, may I read a short version of the story, as retold by James Robertson in his Wee Book of Fairy Tales? This telling is in Scots, and one seldom hears Scots read on a Cambridge radio station, but here, let me fill in this gap. It might sound strange to your ears, but your inner ear will be able to pick up much more than you'd think. And as usual, I apologize for speaking Scots with a slight Philadelphia accent. We read Riding Hood. Lang, lang ago in the days o' lang syne, there was a wee lassie that stayed in a house wi' her mither on the edge o' the muckle green forest. This lassie aiways wore a bright red cloak wi' a hood when she went out, so everybody cried her Wee Red Riding Hood. Gin day her mither called Wee Red Riding Hood ben to the kitchen and said, "Poor Granny Muchie's no that weel, she's in her bed and ta'en a peel. I've baked a cake for her the day, and here's a poke o' apples tae. Noo tak them tae her through the wood. A visit frae you will dear good." Wee Red Riding Hood pit the cake and the poke o' apples in her basket and pit on her red cloak. Granny Muchie stayed on the other side o' the muckle green forest, but Wee Red Riding Hood didna mind. She often walked along the path to Granny's house, and she loved to stop and see the bonny flowers and speak to the wee creatures that stayed among the trees. Just as she was closing the garden yet, her mother called to her through the windy. "Mind noo, lass, and dinna donder, frae the pathway dinna wander. Go straight to your Granny Muchie's house. They say there's a wolf oot on the loose." Wee Red Riding Hood skipped walked and ran along the path through the muckle forest, carrying the basket with a cake and apples in it. After a while, she stopped running and had a kick-a-boot. "Hiya, hoolets, hiya, doos. What's your crack and what's your news? Hiya, squirrel, deer and brock. Would you like to hae a talk?" But the birds and creatures were a bit shy and didn't speak back to her. Wee Red Riding Hood didn't care. She forgot all about what her mother had told her and wandered off the path to poo some flowers for Granny Muchie. She picked down her basket and found some bonny bluebells and pooed a hell bunch. When she gave back to her basket, there was a wolf standing aside it. He was an awfully handsome beast. He had sleek brown fur and bright yellow een and lang claws on his feet and a muckle big smile on his face. Wee Red Riding Hood could count all his teeth, which were much bigger than her own teeth. He had 27, and they were as sharp as nails. "Hello," said the wolf. "What's your name, my dear? Do you reside somewhere around here?" I stay with my mother. There's just her and me. I'm cried Wee Red Riding Hood, 'cause my hood's red and I'm wee." "Oh, lovely. I once kent a man," cried Hood. "No, what brings ye here? Are you looking for food?" "I'm going to my granny's. She's 60 year old, but she's off in no wheel. She's in bed with a cold. I've brought her a cake and some apples and all, and this big bunch of flowers. Look, are they no just braw?" "Awfully braw," the wolf said. "What a lovely surprise. I can just picture the look in her eyes. But ye shouldna be out in the forest like this. Let me show ye her house. I ken where it is." Wee Red Riding Hood minded what her mother had said. "Thanks, but nae need," she said. "Good afternoon. I ken the way, tay, and I'll be there gay soon." The wolf might have tried to keep her blethering, but just then he heard the chop, chop, chop of somebody cutting wood with an axe. The forester worked in the forest, and the wolf was feared for him. So the wolf said, "Cheerio, hin, I'll see you again," and he slipped into the trees. Wee Red Riding Hood picked up her basket and hurried along the path, but the wolf was quicker. He arrived at Granny Muchie's house first. He chopped at the door. An old voice called out, "What is there?" The wolf put on a wee squeaky voice and said, "It's me, Wee Red Riding Hood. Dinna keep me shut out. I've brought ye a cake and some flowers and some fruit." "Oh, you're a darling," Granny said. "I feel such a wreck. Just come away in, the door's off the sneck." The wolf gave Ben the hoose, shutting the door ahint him, and there in the bedroom was Granny Muchie sitting up in her bed. Afore she had time to cry out, he opened his mouth and ate her up. He was in such a hurry to finish afore Wee Red Riding Hood arrived that he didna even bother to chew, but swallowed her doon in one mouthful. He put on her nightcap and her glasses, pulled at the curtains taked to make the room dark, and loped into the bed. Then he lay there with the cover up under his chin and waited. After a while, there was a chapping at the door. The wolf put on his best old lady's voice and called out, "Wha's there?" And Wee Red Riding Hood said, "It's me, Wee Red Riding Hood. Dinna keep me shut out. I've brought ye a cake and some flowers and some fruit." "Oh, ye're a darling," the wolf said. "I feel such a wreck. Just come away in, the door's off the sneck." Wee Red Riding Hood came in and put her basket on the kitchen table. She hadna even closed the front door when the wolf said, "Come, Ben, my darling, and give me a smile. Come, Ben, and sit wi' your granny a while." Wee Red Riding Hood gaed ben to the bedroom. "Hello, Granny, are you feeling sair? Och, it's awfully dark and there's nae fresh air." "I pulled the curtains to keep out the light. Come closer so I can see you right." Wee Red Riding Hood took a step closer to the bed. It was hard to see much, but her granny smelt as if she needed a good wash. "Granny," Wee Red Riding Hood said, "what muckle lang lugs ye hae?" "All the better to hear ye away," said the wolf. "Come a bitty closer." Wee Red Hood took another step. "Granny, what muckle big een ye hae?" "All the better to see ye away," slavered the wolf. Just come a wee bitty closer." Wee Red Riding Hood stood right next to the bed. "Granny, what muckle sharp teeth ye hae?" "All the better to eat ye away," said the wolf, and he threw off the covers and caught Wee Red Riding Hood and swallowed her doon in yin mouth fee. When he smacked his lips, dichted his face wi' his tongue, and fell asleep in the bed. No, when the forester that worked in the muckle green forest was loosed for the day, he aye walked hame past Granny Muchie's house. On this day, he saw that the door was wide open, which didna seem right. He chapped at the door and got nae answer, so in he gaed, and there on the table was Wee Red Riding Hood's basket with a cake and the apples and the flowers in it. "I ken the basket," the forester said. "Michty, that's queer. It's Wee Red Riding Hood's, but she is na here." He looked in the bedroom, which was all dark. When he opened the curtains a wee chink, he saw the wolf snoring fast asleep on the bed, and nae sign of Wee Red Riding Hood or Granny Muchie. But the forester saw that the wolf's belly was full to bursting. He took out a knife frae his belt, and he carefully cut open the wolf's belly. And there, inside, all squashed up and currying in thegither, were Wee Red Riding Hood and Granny Muchie. The forester put his finger to his lips, and they crept out the wolf's belly without waking him. Then Wee Red Riding Hood gaed into the garden and gathered up some big stains. The forester put the stains inside the wolf's belly, and Granny Muchie took her needle and thread and sewed the wolf back up again. When everything was read up, the forester opened the windy wide and stood at the door and shouted at the top of his voice, "Oh, Granny, I'm hungry. Do you hae any cakes? I've been working all day chopping trees with my axe." The wolf woke wi' a fleg, jumped out of the bed and looped straight out the windy. He ran and ran, but the stains in his belly got heavier and heavier till at last he came to a burn in the middle of the muckle green forest. When he tried to swim across it, the stains made him sink to the bottom, and he drowned. Back at the house, Wee Red Riding Hood, Granny Muchie and the forester all sat down for an apple and a big skliff of cake to their tea. And they all lived happily ever after. Well, that was some weird radio now, wasn't it? But it may not be the weirdest we hear this evening under lamplight. Well, I was reading James Robertson's version of Wee Red Riding Hood. Well, that story gives us the basic story of Little Red Riding Hood. But now it's time to attend more closely. When I used to discuss Little Red Riding Hood in my fairy tales seminar, students were often quick to pronounce this story a moral tale, a warning never to talk to strangers. Is that it? Is that it? What a way to kill a story. We mustn't just impose a simplistic moral tag to a story, as though the details don't matter, only some rule that we try to impose on other people. Stay with me, and we might see that there's a lot more going on here. fairy tales don't teach morals. They teach wisdom. They don't show us what we should do. They show us what we are already doing as we move through life. So we will want to look at various aspects of the story as our way of getting to grips with what is going on. And the first thing to look at is the identity of our main character. Notice, first of all, that this character doesn't really have a name. She just carries the description of a piece of clothing she wears. This girl is just defined by the riding hood. This would have been some kind of cloak, with a hood, of course, designed to go over one's clothes when out walking or riding on horseback or in carriages, to protect the clothes from mud and dust. The world was dirtier in those days, before pavements or street paving and before handy washing detergent or dry cleaning. It's important to remember that in most versions, her grandmother gave her the cloak. Traditionally, the clothes we wear can become symbols of our identity. And here, I think the girl is invited to take on her grandmother's identity, or at least she's having her identity defined by her grandmother. She's not, at the start of the story, her own self. In fact, we might say the hood masks her real identity like a monk, or indeed like a hoodie. We should remember, too, that the hooded cloak is meant for travel, and travel reminds us that Hermes, god of travel, is involved here, which warns us also that there will be trickery going on and no straight path. And since Hermes was the one who led you down to the underworld, well, we might expect her path to lead to some kind of death experience. Not on the face of it a jolly story, but we knew that, right? And by the way, why red? On a practical level, red seems an appropriate color if the forest is full of hunters. Let her wear something she'll be seen in. On the other hand, if the forest is full of dangers, maybe she'd be better off in a camouflage riding hood. Or maybe Grandma wants her to court danger. Maybe, on a more symbolic level, the color red connects her to passion. Maybe the grandmother wants to awaken her granddaughter's passion. Or perhaps just remind the girl of her innate passionate nature. Are the grandmother and the granddaughter both passionate people, as opposed to the middle generation, the mother, who seems to squash the girl's passion by telling her to be obedient and stick to the safe path? In any case, the color red leads us into this.
My gal is red hot.
Your gal ain't doodless.
Yeah! My gal is red hot.
Your gal ain't doodless.
Well, she ain't got no money, but man, she's really got a lot. Well, I got a gal sitting before, sitting in the kitchen with her feet out the door. But my gal is red hot.
Your gal ain't doodless.
Yeah! My gal is red hot.
Your gal ain't doodless squat.
Well, she ain't got no money, but man, she's really got a lot.
Your gal ain't doodling.
Yeah! My
morning, but my tears really got a lot. Watchy woman, change your mind every night, but my gal is red hot.
Your gal ain't doodly squat.
My gal is red hot.
Your gal ain't doodly squat.
Well, she ain't got no money, but man, she really got a lot.
Classic rock and roll from Sun Records. My gal is red hot, sings Billy Lee Riley, and then the guys in the back shout, "Your gal ain't doodly squat." They're ready to put down his gal, probably because, as we learn in the song, she's got no money. Who wants a gal who can't bring in the dough? And moreover, she's 6'4", sleeps in the kitchen with her feet out the door. Not your standard beauty, not what we're supposed to regard as hot. But apparently she is hot. In the way that counts, red hot deep inside. And perhaps this is what our little red heroine needs to discover about herself. Well, she walks all night, walks all day. She's the kind of woman who'll get her way. But not yet for little red. She has to be tested first, surely. She may be red, but she's not hot yet. Now, Next, we ought to look at Little Red Riding Hood's mission. She's being sent across the woods to bring healing to her grandmother, to the person who gave her that red hood and called her beautiful. It's a kind of reciprocal action, isn't it? The grandmother is on the other side of the woods, setting herself up as the goal for the girl. She's the crone to Little Red's maiden. I sometimes wonder why Grandma is unwell, or better yet, why she needs her granddaughter to nourish her. We'll see later on that she, in the guise of the wolf, has to eat the girl, consume her. Is that how crones become healed? By taking into themselves the younger generation? This is not such a straightforward story, is it? And what about this healing mission? She's not going just to cure her grandmother. Ambulances make that kind of journey, and they go on a straight path direct to the ailing person and direct back to the hospital. No time lost. Little Red's mother wants her to do this too, and she tells the girl to follow the straight path through the woods. But the girl doesn't do that. She's not an ambulance. She's going to nourish and to heal, and these journeys are never straightforward. In the Charles Perrault version of the story, the mother bakes some cakes and tells the girl to take the cakes and a little pot of butter to her grandmother. In the Grimm Brothers version, she gives the girl a piece of cake and a bottle of wine, some sort of communion ritual. In the Italian version, retold by Italo Calvino, the girl is sent off to borrow Grandma's sifter, and she takes with her a snack, ring-shaped cakes and bread with oil. But maybe it doesn't matter what was in the basket. What matters is the girl herself. Her very presence is the healing. Robert Johnson, an important popularizer of the psychological ideas of Carl Jung, had been a student of Jung's, and he once mentioned to Jung that he was afraid he might not know enough to be an effective clinical therapist. "Don't concern yourself about that," Jung told him. "You heal not by what you do, but by who you are." That's an amazing statement, and worth pondering further. You heal not by what you do, but by who you are. Remember, we're talking about healing, making whole, not about curing, which is the relief of the painful symptoms. Important, but far from the whole story. And of course, in healing others, she's also healing herself. It's as though this story were suggesting to us that it is only through serving others that we become completed ourselves. So there goes Little Red Riding Hood into the woods, bringing her goodies, bringing herself into a dark place on her healing journey. And we know what these woods are all about, don't we? In Dante, in Hawthorne, in so many other storytellers and myth-makers, the woods are lonely, dark, and deep. That's Robert Frost's way of putting it. They are the place where we find ourselves, or rather where we get so lost that we realize we are no longer that self we had thought we were when we entered. Dante says he found himself lost in a dark wood. How can you find yourself if you're lost? Are you lost or are you found? Dante says it was both at once. And this is a paradox, which means it's sure to be true. And the dangers in the woods are represented here by one of the most famous villains in fairy tales, the wolf. Though we may see in a few minutes that he's not quite the villain people at first see him as. And as our next song says, even bad wolves can be good. And what's going on in the wolf's mind? Well, here he is, on the prowl.
Ow! Who said I see walking in these woods? Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want. Listen to me, Little Red Riding Hood. I don't think little big girl should go walking in these spooky old woods alone. My sheep suit on till I'm sure that you've been shown that I can be trusted walking with you alone. Oh, Little Red Riding Hood, I'd like to hold you if I could, but you might think I'm a big bad wolf, so I won't.
Had to play that song, didn't I? And maybe this whole show was just an excuse to share the song with you. Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs with their one hit, Lil Red Riding Hood. You're everything a big bad wolf could want. The song confuses the wolf from this story with the wolf in sheep's clothing, but that's all right. Sam the Sham, great name, is looking at the wolf as the great seducer, the great trickster, dressed as an innocent, but preying on the little girl. Or is he just playing at preying? Nothing's ever clear-cut in the dark wood. But one thing is clear. You're listening to Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Radio with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, as we attend to the story of Little Red Riding Hood. And Neil Henry's multiple attempts at a tag for the show were so popular last time that I'm not going to edit this, but leave it as it is.
When the day comes to an end, he invites you to attend Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Radio. When the day comes to an end, he invites you... No. When the day comes to an end, he invites you to attend. It's Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Radio. It's Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Thank you. Okay, so here's the wolf posing as the friend of Little Red Riding Hood, or the false friend, or just friends. To help us here, let's have a song by the Kinks from the film Percy. The song is called Just Friends. Percy, as you may know, is a 1971 film starring Harold Bennett, Denham Elliott, Elkie Summer, and Britt Eklund, about a man who has lost his penis, who has had his penis cut off in a freak accident, and then becomes the world's first penis transplant. He wakes up appalled at what's happened to him and goes in search of all he can find out about all the men who died that day and whose organ might have ended up on his body. It's a silly comedy, you see. The redeeming feature of the film is the music by the Kinks. Just Friends is the song that comes in when the guy knocks on the door where a possible donor had lived and is greeted by the man's male friend, who welcomes him in with a creepy kind of stereotype of a gay queen. Here's Ray Davis early on playing with the taboos against bringing gay subjects into popular music. Is this a friendly invitation or a seduction? Is this a wolf or a pastiche of a wolf or what? I hope you'll love this wonderful Baroque Gothic song.
Please step inside just for a while. I want to befriend you and just make you smile. You've nothing to lose, I've nothing to gain. I shall not molest you, I shan't rape your brain.
Friends we'll become, friends we will stay. Forever, not just today. Please don't deceive, please don't pretend. Just be my companion and friend through the end.
That was the Kinks' Just Friends, an elegant but disturbing song with strings and harpsichord rather than the usual Kinks' hard rock in the background. Is this how the wolf might have sounded? Vampishly seductive? On one level, of course, this wolf is a terrible threat to the girl. He's meant to represent all the very worst things in the dark woods, But myths and fairy tales have a way of turning us around and showing us that the things we most fear are the very things we must stand up to and even follow to see where they might lead. I think it's very important that the wolf does not, at least in many important versions, he does not invite Little Red to come into the woods for any self-seeking reasons. He invites her to look at the beautiful flowers. In the Grimm version, the wolf says, "Little Red Cap, have you seen the beautiful flowers all about? Why don't you look around for a while? I don't think you've even noticed how sweetly the birds are singing. You're walking along as if you were on the way to school, and yet it's so heavenly out here in the woods." And he's right. The story now becomes a story of what happens when we respond to the invitation of beauty. Her mother tells her to follow the right path, to the right path of the rules imposed on her. The wolf tells her to come feed her soul with beauty. Beauty is dangerous, yes, but what better path can we follow? And finally, we arrive at Grandma's house. But we're not the first to show up there that day, are we? The wolf has been there first and has eaten Grandma and put on her nightdress and is lying in bed waiting for Little Red Riding Hood. But wait, what does all this mean? We're back to issues of identity. You are what you eat, you know, so now having eaten Grandma, the wolf is Grandma. He's taken on her identity. This is reinforced because he puts on her clothes, another sign of identity. And of course it works the other way around too. The wolf is Grandma, but the grandma is the wolf. So who is it that the girl meets when she comes into the house? Is it the wolf? Or is it the grandmother? Or both at once? Or the grandmother in her aspect as a wolf? And why would the grandmother want to be a wolf? Why would she want to see Juice and eat the girl, that is, take on the girl's identity too? Here's the way I see it. It's a little complicated, but I think it works. We're talking about acculturation, a big-shot term for learning how to live in society. Before we grow up into our own selves, we have first to be swallowed up in our culture. We have to be swallowed up in the customs passed on to us by our ancestors, not our parents who are too near to us, but further back, symbolized by the grandparents. Values about what is decent, the workings of sisterhood or brotherhood, the communal dreams, all these things the older people are there to pass on to us. We must lose ourselves by conforming to these things. As we do this, we're nurturing the culture, symbolized by Little Red bringing food to her grandmother, and indeed becoming food for her grandmother, Wolf, giving new life to the old culture, the new life of the younger generation. And this is what happens in those versions of the story, like the Perrault version, that end with the wolf eating her. The individual has now taken her place within the older culture. But other versions take it further, and the woodsman comes and rescues her in a kind of new birth. Both the grandmother and the girl are reborn, stronger than ever before, the girl now separate from the grandmother, a new individual, transformed and ready to move on to live her own mature life. Let's not jump ahead. We've arrived at the central moment. It's very eerie, very perverse, very unpleasant. The wolf wants her to get into bed with him. Now, there's nothing wrong with getting into bed with Grandma, especially if she's cold and wants you to help her warm her up, and especially if she's old and needs you to be close so she can hear and see you. But when we know that it's the wolf inviting her, then we're looking out for the danger. "Don't you worry about what's on your mind," the wolf says. "I'm in no hurry. I can take my time, O woman. I'm going red and my tongue's getting tied. I'm off my head and my mouth's getting dry." We know that story. "Don't hang me up and let me down. We could have fun just grooving around.
Don't you worry about what's on your mind, O woman. could have fun just grooving around,
round and round and oh my my.
Let's spend the night together. Now I need you more than ever. Let's spend the night together.
Let's spend the night together. Now I need you.
Let's spend the night together. Now I need you more than ever. Let's spend the night together
now.
Ba-ba-ba.
Oh, mama, 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 mama.
Let's spend the night together.
But now I need you,
ba-ba-ba.
Need you more than ever. Oh, man.
Let's spend the night together.
I'm satisfied. You're every need, woman.
Well, yes, we let the Rolling Stones give us the Wolf's line here. Let's spend the night together. But in the morning, there will be only one of them. This doesn't happen to me every day, he says. I'll bet. There are other versions of the story that are much more gruesome, almost too much so for a modern audience. There's a French folk version in which the wolf, having killed the grandma, invites the girl to have some meat and wine, which she does not know are the flesh and blood of her grandmother. And then the wolf gets down to business. I'm reading from Maria Tartar's translation of the French version. "Take your clothes off, my child," said the wolf, "and come into bed with me." "Where should I put my apron?" "Throw it into the fire, my child. You won't be needing it any longer." And when she asked the wolf where to put all her other things, her bodice, her dress, her skirt, and her stockings, each time he said, "Throw them into the fire, my child. You won't be needing them any longer."
Please step inside just for a while. I want to befriend you and just make you smile.
And yet, there's one more game to play. In most versions, she gets into bed, scared and stalling for time, hoping that things aren't what she begins to think they're looking like. Grandma looks suspiciously unlike Grandma. Now, this can be a very scary moment in the story, and yet, in most tellings, the tension is relieved through playfulness. "Grandma, what big eyes you have! All the better to see you with." The questions and answers become a kind of game, and kids love it. And the storyteller can expand this as long as it's appropriate to build up the suspense, with the kids waiting, bursting in expectation, knowing what's going to end the dialogue. We can add, what big eyelashes you have, Grandma, or what big hairs sticking out of your ears you have, Grandma. But we have to end with, what big teeth you have, Grandma, so that then the storyteller can burst into the climax. No more games now. All the better to eat you with. And at that, he ate her all up. kids love it, not because they're on the wolf's side, but because they have an innate appreciation of fine drama. No other fairy tale offers such a wild moment in the telling. But that French version gives a different ending. The girl suddenly tells the wolf that she has to, well, answer the call of nature. Please, could he let her go outside and do it? Do it in the bed, the wolf disgustingly suggests. No, please, I need to go badly outside. All right, says the wolf, and he ties a rope to her leg so she won't run away. But as soon as she goes outside, she unties the rope and attaches it to a tree and, of course, runs away. Stupid wolf. This is a version celebrating the girl's initiative and the triumph of cleverness over brutishness. But there's not much mythic sense here, or not much that we want to go into right now. We are canny enough by now to realize that taking off clothes is taking off identity. The girl takes off her Red Riding Hood and all other clothes, revealing what King Lear calls unaccommodated man or woman. All playing around is finished. Now for the deep work on the self. Little Red Riding Hood, who had come to bring healing food for Grandma, has now become that food herself. Let's hope it heals Grandma in the guise of wolf as he eats the little girl. But now, the bed is not only the place of sex and of sleeping and of death. It's also, certainly in times past, the place of birth. And in many versions, along comes the fortuitous woodsman who just splits open the wolf, and Grandma and Little Red are born again from this pseudo-womb. In a deep mythic pattern, she is born again by first passing through the worst, through the belly of the whale or wolf, and returns, as does Grandma. The world goes on, and the people in the world go on too. And they lived happily ever after, as we say, meaning that everything felt refreshing and joyful in this brand new life. It was, of course, a new morning.
Can't you hear that rooster crowing? Rabbit running down across the road, underneath the bridge where the water flowed through. So happy just to see a smile underneath the sky blue on this new morning. Can't you hear that motor turning? Automobile coming into style, coming down the road for a country mile or two. So happy just to see you smile underneath the sky blue on this. It always does when you're with me. Can't you feel it, sun shining? Round hook running by the country stream. Must be the day that all of my dreams come true. So happy just to be alive on a underneath this sky blue on this new morning.
Bob Dylan, New Morning. The joy of rebirth. So happy just to be alive under this sky of blue. And now her own new self. Now, I said at the beginning that fairy tales don't show us what we should do. They show us what we are already doing as we move through life. Is that what we see in Little Red Riding Hood? Is this story a vivid, non-realistic retelling of the journey we all, or most of us, take in adolescence? The teenager becomes aware of the social norms, that's grandma in the story, and has an impulse to nourish them, finally surrendering his or her identity to the norms, looking like everyone else, acting like everyone else. And even though the teenager's norms may look different from the grandparents' norms, funnier hair, differently styled clothes, a whole different set of slang. Nevertheless, the teenager's adherence to what the group is doing ensures that some kind of cultural solidarity will be continued. But at the expense, of course, of the person's individuality. Little Red Riding Hood has been consumed by Grandma. And as I said, that's how it remains in many versions, especially those conservative versions that want us all just to assimilate into society. But in other versions, she is liberated and takes up her new life, striking out on her own, knowing where she or he comes from, the roots that have been instilled into her being, but no longer swallowed up in that culture. There's no moral lesson here, unless it's the advice to ignore mother and be lured from the straight path by the love of beauty. But there certainly is wisdom, and you can, can't you, see some pattern in your own life of this happening, or maybe it's a pattern that will someday, if you're open to it, that will weave itself into your life. But first it appears you have to leave your home. Home is where one starts from, you'll recall T.S. Eliot told us. As we grow older, the world becomes stranger, the pattern more complicated of dead and living. As in Little Red's mother, who can only see the straight, dutiful path of life, is she alive or dead? Or Grandma and the girl, apparently dead inside the wolf, but is this just the prelude to deeper living? And the passage says, it's not the lifetime of one man only, or one girl. This is a pattern for all of us, since here and now cease to matter. And when we are speaking of fairy tales and myths, here and now cease to matter. And two other lines from that passage in four quartets. There is a time for the evening under lamplight, and that also means there's a time not for evening under lamplight. And we're coming up to that time, to the end of the show. But then also, as Eliot quotes from Mary Queen of Scots, in my end is my beginning. And so, as the show ends, it also begins, not just Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs running through our heads for the next week or so, but also the reverberations of the images from Little Red Riding Hood, the straying from the path to follow beauty, or the being swallowed into the ancestral world around us, and, if we're lucky, being delivered again to live in a new, mature way. But now, as T.S. Eliot didn't say, there is a time for the evening under lamplight to come to an end. And it's that time now, so I'll sign off and remind you that you've been listening to Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Radio with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson. And let's meet up again in a fortnight. And yes, the wolf, the villain hero of the piece, wants to say goodbye too.
Well, muchachos and muchachuettes, I tell you, guess the show is over, you can collect your bets. It's time for the old wolf man to go. It's time for him to play. I got 16 women coming over. Oh, gosh, oh, gee, they just can't stay away. Bye, everybody. It was just like hydrogen being with you. And you know what a gas that is. Bye, everybody.